Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Hey!
Jambo jambo!
I was not expecting that.
Habari! That's all the Swahili that I know. Hello, how are you?
I'm impressed. Right there. Very impressed. How are you? How was it? How was the 22-hour flight?
Well, in my New Year's goals, yeah. I decided that I wasn't going to be always talking about the negatives first, so I'll come to that. The positives were the holiday was the best holiday we've ever had and really, really healing for all of us, really restful. The kids slept, swam, chilled out. Being my mum was hands down, like, you know, you guys listening know that I've had a really up and down relationship with her.
Yeah.
But something about her needing me as much as I needed her this time just brought us together. We didn't have any arguments with her partner, which was always really lovely. It's always really very rare because there's always something that goes wrong and none of it happened. And like me and Dozer fell in love again and had this really sort of romantic time together, which I really needed. It was just perfect. I feel like a different person. I feel like the old me, actually.
Oh,
or maybe this is a new me.
Maybe it's the new old you.
The new old me. The 22 hours traveling back with the children, however, was like a big fuck you and a big smack in the face down to earth. Get back to England immediately. Oh my God. It was hard.
What did you do? Were they okay? When I read that, I was like, oh my God.
I did say to them, we could travel anywhere in the world now. Like, we could have gone to Australia in that
time.
You
could. Yeah, exactly. That is a great way to look at it.
Yes.
You can take on anything now. You've done
exactly.
It. And it wasn't that bad. You all lived.
I'm going to do a tips for traveling with little ones. We're going to do it a reel and you guys need to save it down because there was definitely things that we didn't do that I was like, Jesus, we should have done. And then there were the essentials, which we couldn't have got through the journey without. So I'll do that, but mainly fully charged iPads with chargers.
Dropped it. I mean, that is, if you don't remember anything else, just remember that.
How are you? How was your weekend?
I'm all right. I'm good. Oh gosh. On Friday, Gigi had her preschool jabs.
Oh God.
Right. I kind of didn't remember, you know, I don't think I took Axel. I think James must have taken Axel because I definitely didn't. And I like all the jabs when they're a baby. Yeah, you feel bad, but they can't, you know, they're a tiny baby and they can't tell you that they hate you because you made them go through it or anything like that. So we go into the room, me, Axel and Gigi, and I've done all the things. Like I've got them, you know, got her sweets to sit and eat while she's having them done. Basically, she screamed the place down. Like when we came out, like people in the waiting room were like white as a sheet, like fucking hell, what is going on in there?
Oh no.
Axel nearly passed out because of the needle and he went white as a sheet and he had a chocolate bar in his hand. And it was completely melted everywhere. Then I took her to Sainsbury's after and I'd ordered something from Argos, like as like a sort of to preempt her being brave or whatever. We'll get a treat when you know you're finished. She walked around holding her arms, screaming, saying, I've got two broken arms. I've got two broken arms. Help me.
Oh my God. And everyone there must have thought, what has this mother been doing to her children?
Oh my God, what the hell? Yeah. Anyway, James has taken Axel to football. I've had Gigi screaming the whole time. I can't. And I was literally feeding her Pick a Mix because she couldn't use her arms anymore.
I'm going to throw it out here. Gigi hands down, a bigger diva than Mariah Carey.
No, you wait. Axel is the biggest one. He finishes football, right? And James phones me like, oh, we're just on our way back from football. Can you put the dinner on? Axel suddenly screams out in pain. So James is driving. He's like, oh my God, what? And he went, I feel like I'm having an injection.
Oh, God.
So James is like, what the fuck is going on? He was screaming solidly for about 40 minutes. They're just looking at each other like, what has happened here? We've got one child who thinks she's got two broken arms, and yeah. We've got another child who thinks he's having an injection, but he's not.
I'm just going to throw another thing out here. Okay, going to Kenya, right, and having time with. And this is a blanket kind of like generalization, but I'm looking at my own children for this.
Yeah,
the kids that are sort of maybe into the international kids and the Kenyan kids, they're so much more resilient. They were so much more resilient than my own children, and I'm wondering whether it's because we over pander to them so much. You know, we constantly giving them what they want all the time. You know, they bump themselves. I'm rushing over. Oh, what's happened? Here's a plaster. And I saw the difference. Like hanging out with kids over there, one of them like fell off the back of this. We've got this like outdoor dining table, and one of my friend's kids fell off backwards, smacked his head on like the concrete floor, barely cried. He was just like, no, it's all right. And I was like, there's actually blood. Like, are you going to be all right? And he was like, no, it's fine. And I don't know whether it's because we just do too much for them.
Maybe. I mean, Axel, when he actually gets hurt, is usually really good and brave. But obviously, he's just completely traumatized by needles. Like, you know, they give a bravery certificate after. Don't show me that.
I need to tell you what happened to Kit when we were in Kenya.
Because
I haven't shared this with anyone yet. So we're down on the beach one day, and Kit has never been that fond of going in the sea. He saw something on kids' YouTube once with like a big octopus, and he's like, I'm not going in there. And I'm like, look, it's fine. We'd finally gotten to a place. His armbands were off. He was loving it. We were building his sandcastle. I was like, this is like a scene from a movie. It's all going so well.
Yeah.
He runs into the sea. The waves are like lapping over him. He's lying down. Suddenly, high-pitched scream. Ah! And I was like, oh my fucking God. Jellyfish.
No.
Portuguese man of war on his leg. They get their tentacles right into you as well. So this is going on. I'm screaming for Dozer. And I was like, by this point, the jellyfish had fallen off. Luckily, it was a baby one. And I was like, Dozer, you're going to have to piss on him.
Wee on him, yeah.
And he was like, I can't. And I was like, you have to. Anyway, so there's Dozer with his little stinky dink out, taking a wee over Kit. And Kit's going, why is Daddy doing a wee on me? And I'm like, I don't know. Because afterwards I Googled it, and it's not something that, apparently it's like an old wives' tale. Yeah, apparently it's not even a thing now. I mean.
Oh my God. When I was in Magaluf, whenever that was, 20, whatever.
Who pissed on you? You didn't even get a jellyfish.
The lifeguard
pissed on you.
Yes.
Oh my fucking God.
Oh my God. Oh no.
Oh my God, Georgia. Did you sleep with him afterwards?
No.
What?
Funny enough, I was pretty disgusted and horrified.
Well, that's the end of that podcast. Guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. No, let's get into today's chat, George.
Let's do it. Let's be serious. Because actually, this episode was absolutely incredible. Yes. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, she's really outspoken on social media, actually. And she's definitely one that doesn't beat around the bush.
No.
Today's guest is direct. She's honest. She's raw. She's vulnerable in the best way possible. And it definitely delivered having those conversations with her brand new mum. It's a really good one. Stick around for it. Georgia, who are we chatting to today?
We are chatting to Chloe Madeley.
Now, I always really love it when we get our mates on the podcast, but this one is a particularly special friend. Our husbands have been mates since they were about 15 years old. The stories and the things that they got up to, Chloe and I don't fucking want to know half of them. Sadly, we know the other half. Really, really excited to welcome this amazing woman on the podcast today. New mum, TV, well, I guess like parents have been around for a really long time. She's been around for a really long time, comes from a dynasty of TV presenters, fitness fanatic. New mum, it's Chloe Madeley.
Yeah.
Yay! Yay! Are you Chloe Haskell or Chloe Madeley still?
I'm Chloe Madeley, but don't, like, just don't mention it around James because he's got a real bee in his bonnet about it. And I'm like, no, I prefer being a Madeley. No offense, Team Haskell.
That is fair enough. How are you, Chloe? How's your morning been?
Well, I mean, I went for Sunday lunch at my parents yesterday and they have so much leftover booze from Christmas. I honestly think that they just saw me as like a gateway by which to get rid of it. So they were just filling up my glass. And I reckon we must have been there for about 4 hours. And I think we got home at about 5:30. I genuinely do not remember how I got home. I'm very, very grateful that James was completely sober and had Bodhi, because it wouldn't have been good if he hadn't been there.
You've got such a wonderfully brilliant kind of vibrant family, and your parents, have been kind of really big influences in your life, haven't they? You do a lot with mm-hmm. them. They're not just parents. They're really good mates to you guys as well, aren't they?
Yeah, we're really lucky. I'm really lucky. As I've grown older, I've just gotten closer and closer and closer to my parents. And now we live like 5 minutes down the road. We have done since we moved here in November. I can't remember the last weekend where we didn't go over there for a meal. And it's just, poor James, actually, I say that. I think he loves it. Him and my parents get on incredibly well. But I feel very lucky that I can say that. I know that not everybody's that lucky. And actually, it hasn't always been like that. And it might not always be like that. But it is, we've got a very special, very tight-knit family. And we're all completely different, which only goes to like kind of enhance the experience.
Yeah. Do you think having Bodhi has made that even stronger? Is the relationship on a different scale now?
Yeah, completely. I think me and my mum growing up, it was really unfortunate, actually. You know, when after I was born, she got really bad postnatal depression and it went undiagnosed for a long time. And then when she finally kind of was on a good track to getting that sorted out, it turned out that she needed a hysterectomy, and she'd needed one again for a really long time and didn't know about it. And then when she finally had the hysterectomy, it didn't go very well. The operation didn't go very well. The recovery didn't go very well. And it was just kind of really weirdly and unfortunately for our relationship, kind of event after event after event, that really kind of got in the way of us really bonding. And by the time I was a teenager, my relationship with my dad was so solidified, and my relationship with my mom was just very murky and just not really that solid. And as I've gotten older, like I said, we've gotten closer and closer. And then when I got pregnant, oh my God, it was just like, I went from 0 to 100 in a day.
It was
crazy. The bond came thick and fast and very organically. It wasn't kind of forced or anything. But now that Bodhi's born, it just seems to be growing, getting stronger and stronger. And I would say this sounds a bit fickle and like, I guess slightly immature to say, but I do think it's true that I'm probably closer to my mum now than I am to my dad, which I never saw coming.
I genuinely never thought I'd hear you say that, Chloe, if I'm honest with you. It's the conversations that we've had, you know, privately about it. I know that you've struggled with that relationship. So that's amazing to hear you say it.
It's incredible. And she's just become like my absolute favorite. But it's just so odd, because anyone who kind of has had this kind of bond happen later in life with a parent or a family member or whatever, it's just so odd picking up the phone and calling my mum. Again, a sentence I just never thought I'd say, but I call her like pretty much every other day now about something. And she's just like one of the best people in my life. And I'm just really, really, really grateful for that. Mm.
Do you think you have more of an understanding about what she went through now that you're a mother yourself?
Yes, I do. Although we had very different experiences. She had twins her first go around. Then after that, she had my brother Jack, and then she had me, and she got really bad postnatal depression. What I think more so than feeling like, oh, I'm experiencing what you're experiencing, is I see how full of love she is, and I see how much her children and her family have meant to her and mean to her. I've got a whole new kind of view of that now. And that's been quite eye-opening. I don't think I realized quite how maternal she was because of, the relationship that we've had until I got pregnant with Bodhi. Yeah, that's been fascinating.
Mm. Wow. Tell us about, getting pregnant with Bodhi. Obviously not the intimate details.
Please don't tell us those details.
Yeah, it's still the morning. I'm not really up for that. But did you feel pressure to start a family?
It's really interesting. So my whole experience of getting pregnant, and it's very contradictory. And I think a lot of people read about it or would hear different snippets of what I say and be like, well, that doesn't make sense because before she was saying that. And it's because it, like everything in life, it is a bit contradictory. It was a bit, it's a bit gray. It's not black or white. I didn't think I wanted to have kids for a really, really long time. I was really on the fence about it. I love what I do for a living. I'm very busy. I like to travel a lot, you know. As Zoe knows, I'm a bit of a party girl. Like, it just didn't really feel like it was something. It looked to me, having kids, it looked a bit shit, just to be totally honest. I was like,
it is.
I was like, it looks a bit shit.
So,
yeah, it's like, I don't really want to do that. And then I guess I kind of, I came off birth control and, just weirdly, it was. I think we were away. I think we were kind of traveling around Europe for a couple of weeks, and we were away, and I kind of just didn't really come back on birth control, and I didn't really care or think about it because James and I were married, and you know, even though I didn't really think I wanted kids, I also hadn't made like a cold hard decision on it. So it's like, well, we're married, and like I'm in my 30s, and you know, whatever. I just never really just didn't really kind of overthink it, and then. About a year and a half went by, and I swear to God, no joke, I woke up in like the middle of the night having a complete anxiety attack thinking, oh my God, I haven't been on contraception for a year and a half and I haven't gotten pregnant. I'm infertile. And that came out of nowhere and was quite shocking and scary, as I'm sure a lot of women can relate to when you have a thought like that, with some real merit behind it. So I went to the gynecologist that week, and he did kind of all of my kind of hormones and internal examinations and everything. And he was like, no, you're textbook fertile. Like, I can't really understand why you're not getting pregnant. He was like, it's kind of less statistically likely that it's James. Why don't you actually make a go of it and try? And that's when I decided, like, I have to make a decision. And the decision is I want to have children. I don't want... I kind of said to myself, I think I would regret not doing it more than I'd regret doing it and regretting it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I was like, okay. And then I came home to James and we tried, you know, when I was ovulating, you know, obviously we cycled it all and I still wasn't getting pregnant. And I went back to my gynecologist a few months later and he was like, every day bar when you're bleeding, do it. Yeah. And within 2 months I was pregnant and then it happened. And then in my pregnancy, I actually kind of regressed. In my third trimester, I was like, oh my God, what if I've made the wrong decision? And I was like riddled with panic. And then she was born and it was the best day ever.
we've talked a lot, but one of the conversations that came up a lot was that, is it going to be the right thing for me, chat? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me the good bits, tell me the bad bits, but what can you still do with your life? Like, you wanted to find out everything. You were actually a really good person to chat to because there isn't a conversation that you cannot have with Chloe. Like, she wants to hear all the details, you know, tell me about the sleep, tell me about the birth, tell me about this, tell me about that. Is it going to be a good thing? But ultimately, I always felt that you guys would be the most incredible parents. I think seeing you that day when you came around to our house and you sat in the garden with Luna and Kit and was Ily there that day? I don't know. And suddenly it just clicked and you and Luna were together in the garden.
Luna's still my favorite baby. Well, not, she's not a baby anymore, but she's still my favorite child after Bodhi, including all my nieces and nephews. I love her.
Chloe and Luna formed an incredible bond that day. And I think maybe you left and thought it was like a decision kind of made for you, I guess, in a way. Like it was becoming easier to see yourself as a mother and actually maybe for me, so much more maternal than I thought you were going to be.
Yeah, I know. That shocked me too. I've never been that person that's like, I really want kids or I really want dogs. Or I mean, James forced me to get a dog, but that's another story. I've just never really been like that. And I, I'll be honest, I'm quite selfish and I'm quite self-sufficient. I'm like fiercely independent. And I just didn't think it would suit me. And I will say that from the second I had an emergency C-section and from the second they picked her up and showed her to me, my whole life changed. I'm gonna cry. I have to control it because it was such a shock. I really wasn't expecting it. And I it's the best thing I've ever done. And I'm so happy I did it. And she's just everything to me. Now don't get me wrong, you know, there are really hard moments, there are really hard days. But I've never loved anything more. I've never been happier in my whole life with any decision I've made, let alone my actual day-to-day life, even though it is definitely the hardest time in my life. And I finally understand what it means when people say that. It's really hard, but you'll love it. And you're like completely contradictory.
Doesn't make any sense. Is that what you was most worried about? That you wouldn't be able to almost look after yourself and care about someone else?
Honestly, it just looked a bit shit, guys. Like, you know, you go for Sunday lunch at a pub and like the worst part of it is like either dogs barking in the restaurant area or like babies screaming, parents keep having to get up and go outside to calm the baby down. Mothers look freaked out, everyone's staring at them and judging them, and you know, the amount of money it costs, which is still such a shock to the system.
Yeah.
I know people like, it's expensive. Oh my God, is it expensive? Yeah. And the amount, you know, and how much you really do have to sacrifice. You know, not everything, you know, you can still keep a few things afloat, but you can't have everything, you know, like you once could. But I don't even care. Like, she's just the best thing in the world. I don't care at all.
Can we go back? Let's jog backwards a little bit to your labour, because we love a birth story here at Made by Mamas. So talk us through it.
I love a birth story too. And every time I ask it, Nat, one of our friends, just had twins.
She's like,
the last thing I want to do is tell my birth story one more time. And I'm like, oh my God, no, I need to know. I need to know how it went down. Bodhi was 6 days overdue. So she was 40 and six, and she didn't want to come out. Like, she just didn't want to come out. And basically I was lying in bed about 2 o'clock in the morning one night, and I kept pushing back. They kept talking about induction, and I kept pushing back and pushing back. And they basically kind of gave me like a, we will do it on this date kind of line in the sand. And I was like, oh, I really, really hope I go into labor before then. And I think this was about 2 or 3 days before that date. I don't know why. I look back in hindsight now. I do know why. I understand it. But I look back in hindsight now and I shake my head at myself a little bit. Like, she wasn't coming out. Like, and at some point, you know, everybody, I think, and I know, Zoe, you can relate to this. You really want to have viscerally, like, it's a visceral instinct inside you. You want the most natural childbirth you can have. You want the most natural pregnancy you can have. Even if, you know, like me, you're really pro medical science, right? You just, that it's weird. It's an instinct and it takes over. I didn't want the induction. And anyway, I was lying in bed about 2 o'clock in the morning and I just felt this like pop and my waters are broken. And I loved that because I was like, oh my God, now I know what it feels like, you know, in the film. So I talk about it. So I was like, yeah, that's great. And I was like, here we go, like lying in bed, like, here we go. Now my contractions are going to start. And they just never started. And obviously I knew as the hours ticked on, I just knew that, you know, once your waters are broken, you have 24 hours before you have to go in because of risk of infection. And I just knew that's where it was heading. And I just kept saying to James, okay, like getting mentally prepared for it. Okay, they're going to induce me. You know, as long as it doesn't end in a C-section, it's fine. So that was kind of where my head was at. And then I went in and I didn't realize that with the hormonal drip that you also have to have the epidural. It's not a choice because the contractions are so close together that you just don't have any chance
for the actual birth.
Yeah. And so it's not that it's more painful. It's just that it's so much closer together. It's so intense. You can't really, apparently, you can't really withstand it. So I was like, okay. So they gave me the epidural. In the end, best thing ever. I didn't, you know what, the one thing about my childbirth was I didn't feel a second of pain. And in hindsight, I'm so grateful for that because when things didn't go to plan, at least I didn't have any pain, which would have probably traumatized me. And I would be dealing with some post-birth trauma now because I just think would have been too much for me. So anyway, they gave me the epidural, which I didn't want. So I was pretty pissed off about that. And then I kind of went into this like red mist anger. I don't know why. And then they gave me the hormonal drip. And I was kind of in and out of kind of consciousness all night. This was very late at night, and it kind of started at midnight and went through to the next morning. And every time my contractions would pick up and Bodhi would get further down the birth canal, her heart rate would plummet, which I knew could happen within inductions anyway. But it was really weird. The timing of it was every time I had a big contraction, it would happen. All the alarms would go off. Everyone would come running into the room and turn off all the machines. And the first time it happened was terrifying. The next few times it happened, I was like, okay. And then the last few times it happened, I was like, oh my God, you start to panic. And I was like, oh my God, this isn't going well. And then at 8 o'clock in the morning, the obstetrician came in and she said, Bodhi isn't coming out vaginally. It's not going to happen. Like, you need to accept it. We need to get you into theatre now. and I'd want to get her out basically in the next 20 minutes, which she did. Went into the operating theatre, cried the whole time throughout the whole operation. And all I could think in my head was like, yeah, it was awful. All I could think in my head was like, I don't want the first time I meet my baby for them to be holding her above me with some like backlit hospital lighting. Like it was just I was just in hell with it. And James is incredible. Just held my head and kissed my head the whole time. And then she opened me up, said, okay, the reason why her heart rate was dropping every time you had a big contraction is because the umbilical cord was wrapped 2 or 3 times really tightly around her throat. So every time she'd go down, it would pull. God. Yeah. So they got her out and she and it was weird. As soon as there was a reason why I was having a really legitimate reason why I was having the C-section, I was happy that I was having it. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah.
Then they showed her to me and it was the best day of my life. And I would do it all 1,000 times a day, every day for the rest of my life, just to have that moment again. And I'm going to cry. I just still haven't come down. I'm so lucky. I haven't had any baby blues. I haven't experienced yet. I know it's a bit early to say this, but I haven't experienced any tinkling of postnatal depression. And I'm very lucky. And yeah, that's my birth story.
That's amazing. Oh, what a birth gosh. Story. Did you do any of like, because Georgia made her placenta into capsules and or was it a shake? Did you make it into a shake or capsules?
I had a smoothie and capsules and I've still got a tincture in the loft for when Gigi has her period. Apparently she puts the tincture under her tongue. Got no idea if it works. Not like, absolutely none. But I was the same second time round. I felt like I was on a high and never came down.
Yeah, I love that. We're so lucky as well. I feel almost guilty saying that. And when you have, it's interesting. I was talking to someone, a friend, about it the other day. Like, I feel like when you have a negative birth story or a negative pregnancy or a negative experience, everybody really embraces it and supports you and the response is lovely. And I feel like when you have a really positive experience, it's, you feel almost guilty sharing it. Yeah. I definitely get some weird kind of kickback on social media. People message me and be like, you know, this isn't the same. This isn't everyone's experience. And it's really weird. Like, you just kind of don't really want to share the good bits, weirdly.
Yeah. But then look, like you say, oh, you don't want to share the good bit. And you said, oh, you know, actually parenting looked a bit shit before. But no wonder, because it's so much easier to talk about the hard stuff. And I think we talk about the hard stuff because we need to talk about the hard stuff because we need to have the conversation and then it makes it easier. Whereas that's why when it is good, it is a bit trickier to share because you almost feel like, I guess you feel like you're showing off a bit.
You do.
And you think people don't want to hear it, but they do.
We do want to hear it. We definitely want to hear it. Yeah, we want to hear it.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we? So you had the C-section, which was you thought was everything that you didn't want. We've never had C-section. So tell us what it feels like and what is the recovery like afterwards? And do you still bleed? There's a lot of questions there.
Yes.
Okay.
So yes, you do still bleed because obviously your oven, everything that's in your oven still has to come out, purge itself. So you do still bleed. I mean, in terms of that side of things, the aftermath is exactly the same. Right. So C-section. Here's one thing that I didn't expect and was deeply unpleasant about it. You're on like a decline. So not only are you like lying with your whole abdomen open and two sets of hands rummaging around inside you, all the blood is rushing to your head because you're on a decline. And that was, like I say, deeply unpleasant. And I'm not really sure why that was the case for me, but that was what they did. You don't feel any pain at all, but you are just constantly rocking back and forth because you've got people pushing and pulling and moving, and you're completely numb as well. You know, I had obviously the epidural and a like top up of local anesthetic. So you're really, really moving around. And it's crazy. Like, it's just the weirdest experience for me because it was an emergency C-section. It was deeply psychologically upsetting. You didn't see it coming. I didn't want it. I had all these visions, like every woman does, you know, of how my birth was going to go. And it's so funny because I knew, like, in my logical brain, you know, it might not go to plan, but you just cry because you're mourning something that you're now, like, now, yeah. I don't think I'll ever have a vaginal birth. You're mourning something that you wanted that, you know, you're never going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really intense. The first 2 days are horrible. Like, obviously, you can't really sit up, you can't lie down, and if you try, it's extremely painful. I tried to not take the painkillers as much as possible, and actually, after the first 24 hours, I came off them completely because I just wanted to be present with my baby, and they make you feel like you're high as a kite, and it's very odd. But it was weird. It was like I would like float outside my body and like watch everything that was happening in the room, and I would say to people like, "Can you tell that I'm not with it?" And everyone was like, "No, not at all." But I wasn't with it at all, and I just didn't like it. So I came off them after the first 24 hours. But don't be a hero, anyone listening to this. Like, if you're in pain, take the painkillers.
Yeah.
And then I came home in hospital for 2 days. And then I was just encouraged to take like short daily walks to recover. James was incredible. Again, really had to help sit me up and help me get back down, especially when I was breastfeeding. And he did, and he was amazing. And yeah, I mean, anything you want to know, the specifics, ask me and I'll tell you.
What about, you know, obviously you're really well known for being super fit and working out in the gym. How was that for you, you know, having had a C-section? Did that play on your mind how you would then get back into fitness again?
Yeah, the first thing I said to my obstetrician was like, I don't need to tell you. And she just finished my sentence for me. And she was like, I know. She's like, I know what you do for a living. I know how important it is that you have full yeah. physical function, and from a vanity level as well, that you feel comfortable in your own skin. Don't worry. She was like, and it would be the same for all my patients. I was very lucky. My obstetrician is known. The reason I chose her is because she's known for being the best person in London, really, at emergency C-section. So she got picked for a reason. She knew what that reason was. And I was like, just, you know, help your sister out. She did great. I just knew. Obviously, I'm fully qualified in what I do, and I'm very experienced in what I do, and I take it very seriously. I think there's this misconception about any woman who works in health and fitness or physique like me that, like, you know, we're like, you know, fitness fanatic rushing to get back to the gym, can never not be exercise. It's complete bollocks. Like, if you're as qualified as I am, you know how important recovery is, if in both in short, medium and long run. So I was just very, very prepared to recover properly, which I did. I was back in with my women's health physio 2 weeks after I'd given birth, and I'd been seeing her for my whole third trimester, and I had a graded return to training, and I didn't start training. I didn't pick up a weight again until I was 16 weeks postpartum, which was a lot longer than I expected, yeah. but I was not about to rush it. So you just have to do it properly, whether or not you've had a C-section. The only difference with the C-section and your physical recovery is the scar, the loading of scar tissue. It's just think of it like a very weak surface. So if I were to go into the gym and pick up a weight, I might feel like I knew what I was doing and strong enough to do it. Mm-hmm. But you're loading a very weak surface, and all you're going to do is prolong your recovery and potentially, you know, again, from an aesthetic point of view, mess with the scar tissue. Mm-hmm. So I just took my time. I was really, really patient, and I went to see a physio, and that's what I would recommend everybody does.
Yeah. And getting a mummy MOT as well, if that's something yeah. that you can do listening, that was the best thing that we did, wasn't it, Georgia?
Definitely. Yeah, great. Absolutely. Kind of really,
you know, why is it that every time I'm sneezing or jumping or trying to run, you know, that I'm having issues with leaking? And then it was like, oh, hang on a minute, there's a muscle down there, which I'm not even yeah. working on because I don't even know how to. I thought I was doing it. I was squeezing my bum hole or somewhere else. Down there, I don't really know, but now I know. We've spoken about your mental health, and you said, you know, which is so brilliant to hear, that actually you haven't had any signs of, you know, baby blues. Georgia and I have spoken quite honestly about that moment that you stand in front of the mirror after you have the baby, and in hindsight now I wish that I had been able to look at my body and really appreciate what it had done, but at the time I found it really hard to talk about. I found it really difficult to just even take my gaze to my own eyes in that mirror and look at that body that was left there. I wish I'd thought about it differently. What was your experience around that?
Well, first of all, let's all just be honest here.
Yes.
I know that it's really unfashionable and nobody likes, you know, to say it or to hear it, because for some reason we've been taught that it's, I don't know, misguided or a result of the patriarchy or whatever. Women care about how we look. We just do. And, you know, you can deny it, you can try to change it, deny it till you're blue in the face. You're never going to change it. You know, we were wearing corsets hundreds of years ago. We care how we look. It's how we're built. It's human nature. And I think it is lovely when women do have that experience of like, I was just so proud of what my body has done. But that's really, really rare response. Yeah, and I think a lot of women who say that are probably lying as well. Like, I think we all
or
have
telling
to be
themselves
like,
that so that they think they'll then believe it. Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't think that that's, and actually, you know what? It's perfectly normal if you don't love your cellulite and you don't love your stretch marks. Like, it's okay. And I think, you know, but part of this, we need to forgive ourselves for being human. So I just wanted to make that point. I looked in the mirror. I remember vividly looking in the mirror and I struggled with patience. So I was very patient with my return to training because I didn't want to do more damage, but I struggled with my patience of my body going back to normal visually. I just kept looking in the mirror day after day after day and wondering why 2 weeks postpartum, I still had a pregnant belly. And I was like, why isn't it going down? And even like James, it totally unintentionally would be like, when is it meant to go down? Like, even that question was so triggering for me because I was like, oh my God, oh my God. So I was very, very impatient with it. There was definitely a moment in terms of internally, I remember I had a moment in the shower where, and this must have been just a bit of post-birth trauma, where just the one sentence just flew into my head really strong. I didn't want a C-section and I just burst out crying and I couldn't stop. Yeah. But that was it. Like that, it came and it went. But imagine, I can imagine now, you know, talk to women about their post-birth kind of trauma, that constantly being the front and center in your head and how upsetting that would be and distressing that would be. So I had a small brief experience of that. When my body finally started to look more like it did, you know, before I got pregnant, I was fucking thrilled. I just wore everything that I could possibly fit back into again. Because, you know, you forget your whole pregnancy.
I love your honesty, Chloe. Anyway.
Yeah. I was like, here we go, right? But naked, I'm still impatient and nervous 5 months later. Like, when is my skin? I mean, is my skin ever going to stop this thing, this new jiggle thing it's doing? I don't know. And I'm still a bit impatient. Like, I just want to know, will it go back to normal? And if so, when? And if the answer is yes or no, I just, you know, it's this limbo period, which is kind of messing with my head a bit. But you guys can tell me that. What does change for good and what does go back to normal? Or is it different for everyone?
What changes for good? Your whole fucking life. are we talking about that? No.
Crinkly skin, I don't think changes.
No, I don't. That's
one thing I just don't think. I mean, it does for some people, I'm sure. I've seen plenty of people on the beach with their kids and they don't have crinkly skin on their stomachs. So maybe for some people it doesn't. In my experience, it hasn't gone away, the crinkly skin.
Nor mine.
That's the one thing. Yeah. But I think everything else you can control, right? If you want to.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. And I'm much happier mentally. I'm a happier person when I know what the playing field is. Like, if I know that maybe don't expect it, fine. But yeah, it's true. And I find this with my clients as well. Like, every female body is different and reacts differently to everything. So you really just never know.
Talk to us about your relationship and how it has been post, you know, having the baby and Bodhi being around and how you guys have adapted.
Okay, so this is complicated. In terms of how much I love and appreciate James, I've never loved or appreciated him more. I've never been so grateful to have someone in my life. And he has completely changed in my opinion, and he might disagree. I feel like he's much more patient and caring with me. And he used to be, I mean, Zoe, you know James. Everyone knows James. He's like quite aggressive and has very little time for bullshit, very little patience. And I'll just be honest, not that much compassion. Like, he's just not like that. Since having Bodhi, not even since then, since I went into labor, that seems to have completely changed, at least for me. I'm getting the good side of it now. He's patient, kind, compassionate, caring, and actually putting me and Bodhi first, which again, as an athlete, he never really was very good at doing. You know, any professional athlete will tell you they come first always. So that's been incredible. Getting back into the swing of like a good, healthy sex life has been quite difficult. And I can't figure out if it's me, if it's him, or if it's both of us. I'm going to say it's the latter. It's both of us. But
yeah,
I just feel like I'm not really in a very sexual headspace right now. And I don't
you're not.
Know.
5 months postpartum. Of course you're not.
But that's fine.
Of course you're not. That's fine.
I hope it comes back. And I also don't, I don't really think he is either. Like, he's not, you know, running around trying to jump me. So I'm just a bit like, hopefully it'll go back to normal.
No, do you know what though? We talk about this a lot. And I think it's really difficult to feel sexy after you've had a day of a very unsexy day, basically.
If you've been
changing nappies and you've, you know, been scooping stuff off the floor and just feeling a bit, how do you suddenly then, how does your mind suddenly switch come 7 p.m? Like, it doesn't.
It's true. And it's even just everything from like the second you wake up in the morning. I mean, I'm breastfeeding and weirdly with that come real night sweats, so like I have night sweats, you know, I wake up, you know, my whole kind of stomach and boob area is covered in sticky milk and I'm exhausted, and you know, I just from that, like, that's the start of my day every day. And by the time it's like bedtime now, it's like all focused around like getting Bodhi, having her routine in place so that I can get her down so that she'll fucking stay down for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And like, and then it's like, okay, and now I can breathe, hopefully, but you're still kind of on edge. You don't know if the baby's going to wake up. So there's just not any point in the day where I feel like mentally or physically free enough to even allow sexuality to come into the picture. It's bizarre. Because again, Zoe will tell you, like, and she's the same, we're quite sexual people. So this is very new for me.
Yeah, mate. Yeah. And also I feel like the 6 week checkup with the doctor just sets you up for a massive failure, because they're like, there's no conversation around, okay, you've come in, you're okay now to get back onto like normal living 6 weeks later. But they don't have a conversation with you around, you know, 6 weeks and then you're supposed to have sex with somebody. That might be too soon for you. So, you know, maybe do it when you feel ready. And it doesn't have to be penetrative sex. It could be all the other ways of that you can connect emotionally, physically with your partner. There's none of that language going on. It's literally like, oh yeah, you look okay, right, get on with it. And then we're expected to perform on a level sexually with our partners. And when it doesn't happen, there's a bit of a disappointment from them. There's a feeling of confusion from us. Is it ever going to go back to normal? In answer to your question, it might not, but you find a different way, a different patter, which is, you know, equally as rewarding. But it's not like, there's just lack of understanding around it, I think.
Exactly. And I think, things do change, but again, they ebb and flow because you go through phases. Like, you go through phases where things feel less stressful and you actually feel like yourself, and then you might not again because something happens. But I do think, like, especially when you're breastfeeding, I don't know if, I guess, are you overtouched? Do you feel like you've always got someone on you and you then just feel, I don't know. I don't know if I feel like that now. I'm not breastfeeding, but when I've had the kids around me all day, they've not been at school or they've not been in childcare, I just feel like too many people have been touching me and I don't want to be touched anymore.
Yeah. And also when, like, if Dozer goes down to kiss my, even though I haven't breastfed for like, four and a half years or whatever, if Dozer goes down to like kiss my boob, I sometimes get like a flush of the baby.
So do I. Oh my god, so do I.
It's so funny, isn't it?
So do I.
Is he hands on? Is he, you know, super involved and changing nappies and up in the night?
Yes and no. So James will always offer and he'll always say like, I'll take her tonight. I'll do this. I'm not going to lie, guys. It's not really worth it, because what will happen is she'll cry. And if, let's say, she, for whatever reason, she's having a meltdown about God knows what, usually just that she's so hungry and so tired that she's not feeding properly. And then we're off to the races. And then the whole thing just spirals as far as. James will probably give it like patience of about half an hour max before he'll wake me up and be like, I can't deal with this, can you deal with it? And then he's pissed off, he's wound up, I still have a screaming baby, then I get pissed off with James, I get wound up with James, and then all of a sudden a situation that could have just been like a singular issue is now like a triple threat, and it's like a very intense 4 o'clock in the morning situation. So more often than not, I'm like, thank you for the offer, but I'm gonna do
it myself. I reckon there's loads of people listening to this podcast currently nodding their heads going, that was me and Axel.
I just knew it wasn't worth it, and I was happy with that, and that's the thing. And if you're happy with that, then it's fine, you know, it's fine. It worked for us, it suited me. So I totally get you.
Before we get onto your products, tell us something that surprised you about being a mother that you didn't expect.
Honestly, it's less personal and more about James, how unbelievably meant for it James was. He's just the best, like, with her. And I watch him with her and I'm so relieved because, again, I won't lie, in my third trimester, I was a bit like, James booked a DJ gig with Carl Cox. And I understand it's Carl Cox, but he booked a DJ gig with Carl Cox on my due date.
Carl Cox, yeah, Chloe.
I know. No, but it's my due day. I was like, so at that point, I can't lie to you guys. I was lying in bed on my due date while James is out at the Net DJing with Carl Cox, thinking, well, I've just chosen the wrong person to have a baby with and this is going to be hell. We're going to be divorced within a year. And I absolutely hate him. And I couldn't have been more wrong, obviously, in that moment. He's just the best. And I think that's been the most surprising thing.
Lovely. Also, the percentage of babies that come on their due date is very low in his defense.
That's what he can. But that's why I was so pissed off with him. Because I quoted it's less than 4% of babies in the UK are born on their due date. So then he just kept quoting it back to me and like booking in like thing after thing after thing. Like, I don't think there was a period where I don't think he came home for like 8 nights straight in that week, like in that due date week. And I was just like, oh my God, this is it. I'm gonna go to jail. Like, I can't handle this. It's amazing.
Before we finish up, I know you're really prepared, which we absolutely love. What is the best piece of advice you've been given or that you would give a new mum?
Okay, first of all, wake windows are a thing. Your life's going to get a lot easier if you know what your baby's wake window is. So Bodhi's right now is 1 hour and 45 minutes. And at that point, she's going to start to grumble because she's getting tired. And if I don't get her down for a nap, I'm going to have a horrible day and I'm going to have a horrible night. And I don't know why people don't talk about this, but wake windows, look into it. There's a woman who's all her stuff I've downloaded called the Parent and Baby Coach, Heidi. She's fantastic. So go look for her if you want help on that kind of thing. You know, I think after the newborn phase, which is so on demand, you know, by the time they get to 6, 8 plus weeks, you can start to really get into a routine if you want to, and everyone's different. She's a godsend. Someone said to me the other day, and I love this, everything is a phase. The good, the bad, the ugly, it's all a phase. So don't take anything too seriously. If you're going through a hard time, like Bodhi's going through her sleep regression right now, which is tough, it will end. And also really, really, you know, indulge in the good moments because they're phases too, and they'll be over one day. And I love that. And I think that served me really well. And the last thing I would say, 3 pieces of advice, I'm a really impatient person and having a child obviously is very testing with that quality. Mm-hmm. Just stop trying to rush everything. And this is what I actually really learned over Christmas, trying so hard to get back to the table while trying to put her down for a nap. Yeah. Don't try to rush everything. Just stop. Let it take as long as it's going to take. If it's a feed, if it's getting the baby down to sleep, if whatever it is, let it take how long it's going to take. Try and find the beauty in it. Try and find the bonding in it.
Yep.
And that would be for me, that's really the most, that's the thing I have to think about the most every day. Otherwise, it stresses you out more. It stresses the baby out more. You have a really miserable time of it.
I really love that.
Love that. And your top products. Georgia said you've been prepared. Apparently you lay awake in your hungover state last night and was like, I need to think of these products. So you've got them there. Piece
Looking
of paper.
Looking forward to these. Printed off.
So I've got 5 and some of them are a bit left of field. So in pregnancy, I had bought a book called Your Baby Week by Week. And it's written by these like 2 doctors who have, like I think 5 children between them. Anyway, it's the most brilliant like thing preparing you for what it's actually going to be like when you have your baby, like thinking about things that you never would have thought about before. And also just like health and safety stuff, like, you know, get a floating thermometer for the bath. Now I know by touch, but you know, I was terrified the first time I gave Bodhi a bath. I was going to scald her or what temperature's too hot, you know, and like, newborns are so diddy. Like, so that book honestly just really mentally prepared me and I still listen to it now. So as a newborn, the Docotot, and I think it used to be called something different. What was it? The thing, it's like a little day bed that you put the baby in.
Oh, yeah. It used to be a sleepy head, didn't it?
Now sleepy head, yes. But just having, obviously they can't hold themselves up, you know, just having something comfortable and quite confined to put her in. Oh, the Rocket. Do you guys know what the Rocket is?
Yes, I do.
What's a Rocket?
It's a rocket that rocks the pram so that you don't have to. You just put it on. The baby goes to sleep and you're done. And it's like, thank God for the Rocket.
You can have sit and have lunch and the
The Tommy Tippy sterilizing machine. It's a little bit spenny, but it's worth it. And the last thing isn't a product. It's more of just like, well, it is because you probably have to purchase it, or maybe you don't. Finding Nemo, I honestly can't begin to tell you something about the colors and the fish. I, for her whole wake window, if I need to, and this is really bad parenting, if I need to just shove her in front of that for an hour and 45 minutes, she will watch it. She's completely enthralled by it. I'm hoping it's kind of good for her sensory because it's colors and movement and patterns. Yeah, of course it is.
I'd say so.
Yeah, so I'm like, please be kind of okay. Finding Nemo is literally the only thing she'll watch. And I it's got something to do, like I say, with the colors and the movement of it. And if it's just a godsend, if you want to shower or you actually have to do some emails, I can't. It's my top tip.
Amazing.
I love it.
You know what? They still love it now. We watched it in Kenya on the roof. They're obsessed with it now. And my mum's nickname is Dory. So we talk about Finding Nemo a lot because she's so forgetful, my mum.
I love that. And Finding Dory, by the way, which Bodhi weirdly doesn't do the same thing for her into. As Nemo. Oh,
it's just exclusively Finding Nemo.
Exclusively Nemo. But Finding Dory is one of the funniest films I've ever seen. So everyone should watch that.
Brilliant. Love it.
Brill. Thank you.
Amazing. Chloe, great. What an absolute lovely, amazing hour that we've just had with you. Thank you for being so honest. As always, and you are smashing it, so don't worry about anything that anyone else is saying. Like, in terms of, is this a good film? Yes, it is. Put it on. So back to yourself.
Oh, I love it. Thank you guys so much. This is the first podcast I've done on being a mum, actually. Yes! It's very enjoyable.
Yay! Thank you so much.
See you soon.
Thank you guys.
Oh, loved it.
What a chat that was.
Really loved it. I'm like, we covered so much. Mother-daughter relationships, fitness, birth. Well, I mean, God, everything. Brilliant.
What I really loved hearing from her, and I also heard her fear around saying how much she loves being a mum. And at the moment that she saw Bodhi, even though Bodhi, you know, came into this world in a way that she didn't want in that guise, you know, having the emergency C-section, she was like, the minute that I laid eyes on her, you know, she hasn't had an ounce of baby blues yet. She's really loved every moment of it, that unconditional love. Knowing her personally, that made me feel quite emotional because, as I said before, she wasn't particularly maternal. Neither was I. And I probably say the same thing. But until you hold your baby, you don't really know how you're ever going to feel.
No, and I think as well, it just goes to show, doesn't it? Because, you know, so many people have this plan and how they want it to be. And actually, sometimes, obviously, it doesn't go to plan, but it doesn't mean it won't be amazing. Yeah. It still might be amazing and it still might work out exactly better than you could have ever imagined. And it was really, really lovely to hear that from her. And also, I think it's really great when people speak so openly about perhaps not wanting a family. That's actually the fastest growing, demographic is women who are deciding not to have children. So there are so many people, you know, in that mindset at the moment.
I loved hearing her, George, say, I don't know if you felt this as well, but I loved hearing her say, like, it's okay if you don't love your wobbly bits and it's okay if you don't love your cellulite. Like, I got such a horrible message yesterday on Instagram. I was doing a Q&A on my own personal page and someone was asking me about my training. Like, my food, I don't comment on because I'm not a nutritionist and I wouldn't like to give people advice on what I'm eating and all that kind of stuff. But with the training and stuff, I just fill people in on what I'm doing. I got this message from somebody saying, yeah, and you're still, every single day you're trying to achieve a calorie deficit, you're clearly still anorexic and it's written all over your smug fucking face. That's the message that I got in yesterday. And I don't ever really tend to get trolled. But what I took from it was that it's, some people don't like when other people are fit and healthy and want to train and want to exercise and want to talk about it. And so the way that they deal with it is by trying to put them down. Yeah. And I really don't think that that's fair. Like, if you love the skin you're in, whatever that skin looks like, love it. I love it and I'm proud of it. But I work hard and I train hard and that's okay. I'm not trying to be smug about it and I'm definitely still not anorexic. So fuck you, whoever said that.
No, and I think that's really important as well because there is a trend, you know, at the moment to, you know, see, you know, if you count calories, you're crazy. And if you work out and you don't really feel like it and you feel like you should do, then then that's really bad. But actually, I mean, I'm definitely not at a stage where I could say, oh, you know, I'll just just do whatever I want and then I'll just love my body. That is just not where I'm at. I don't actually know anyone who is. None of my friends that I talk to would say that they don't care how they look and they'll just love their body for how it is now. Maybe that is societal pressure. Maybe that is the way that we've grown up. Who knows what it is? But so many of us don't feel like that. And you can feel like shameful. I do feel better when I've, you know, trimmed down a bit and toned up. I do feel better. I do feel happier, and that is just the way it is. Whether that's wrong or right, who knows? But I love that Chloe could openly say and not be, she's not apologetic about it.
Yeah, and
that's,
I love
just the way she is.
From different people, from different walks of life, you have different feelings around their own body, you know.
The shame just needs to go. Like, however you choose to live your life, whether you choose to live your life not caring, I mean, how wonderful, not caring how you look in the mirror, and it doesn't matter to you whether you're this size or that size or whether you're wobbly or toned or whatever, it doesn't matter. How wonderful, great. But then don't shame people who don't feel like that. Like, I don't know.
This is a conversation for another time, Georgia.
It is. Oh, I'm not taking this on today.
No, massive thank you to Chloe for coming on, opening up such brilliant topics of conversation. We love it. And thank you so much for listening. It feels like the first day of, even though we had a podcast last week, it sort of
first
feels
day
like
term.
First day of term, everyone's back. So thank you for listening. As always, we'd love you to rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow.
Yeah, and any feedback on this episode or any others that you've listened to, guests you'd like to hear from, topics you'd like us to cover, then please do drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMamas on Instagram, and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.